You can listen to The Professional Left wherever you get your podcasts, on Netroots Radio, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for the week of April 19th, 2024. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the Cornfield Resistance, where we are getting dangerously close to our 800th episode, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Hi, Driftglass.
Hey, Blue Gal. No wonder I'm feeling so tired. We're getting real close to 800. That's
800 episodes. That's a lot. Yeah.
That's a lot. That's a lot more.
Thank you so much to everybody who donates to our podcast.
Yeah.
You know, we get on average, I was doing, you know, math this week.
Oh, no.
We get on average 50 cents per listener per episode.
That's pretty good.
So, you know, if you can afford $5 a month, please pitch in $5 a month. That really makes it. That's why it really makes a difference to us.
Yeah. It's, you might notice there are no ads on here.
Yep.
Probably never will be. Occasionally, we were offered one, and it was like some guy with a seven-hour MAGA podcast. Like, no, I don't.
Well,
do you know us?
Buzzsprout, our host, podcast platform host, will insert an ad and pay us every once in a while.
Yeah.
But we have to screen those. And yeah, the MAGA cave is not going to be advertising on our show. Even if he wants to talk to us as if we're patriots.
That's right. That's right, brother. We're all in this together, aren't we, brother? No, we're not all in this together. No.
And one of the other reasons we don't have ads on the show is I don't want to deal with the people who sell ads to podcasts. I just, no offense. We're all human. Nope. We all have mistakes. I just don't want to deal with that.
I have heard podcasts, and there's, again, no judgment. There are some podcasts I listen to that seem to me to be 60% ads.
Yeah.
40%. And the ones that are the same ad literally over and over, like seven times, because we bought the block and we're just going to play it over and over again. And and then you can buy out of it by being ad free as long as you're willing to pay a premium for that.
Yeah. Well, it's tough out there.
I know.
It's tough out there to make a living. And when we talk about making a living, we're talking about a much lower standard of living than certain podcasters we could talk about. Mm-hmm.
Next week, on our 800th episode,
we'll bitch about all the other podcasters.
Oh my God.
Breaking news. We got to do the breaking news that Mark Elias' lawsuit went through and abortion is on the ballot in Nevada. Woo!
That's right.
All right.
So thank you for joining us and have a good afternoon.
You know, it does feel like 2 days ago we did a podcast, and then we say this every week practically.
Yeah.
You know, it feels like a month between podcasts.
It does.
And it's crazy. And next week, we have a lot of things to tell you about next week. Next week on Monday, we are going to be recording the Bill Show with Bill from Australia.
Uh-huh, our friend.
I don't know when. I think he puts his up the next morning, but on Monday evening, our time, we will be recording a show with him. So. Yeah. Keep an eye out for the Bill Show.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tuesday, we have our own podcast. Wednesday is when we prep for the Thursday show.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll podcast again on Thursday. And then Friday, we will be on True Blue Politics with Karen in Chicago.
Yes.
And she is the woman who phoned into the Stephanie Miller Show to talk about one of our podcasts about NBC News and so forth. So, that reminded me to get back in touch with her and say, yes, I know you've been asking us for many a moon to be on your show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So,
yeah.
So that's four podcasts that we will be on, two our own and two other people's next week. And we love doing that. We love being on other people's shows. You have a podcast. If you've been doing a podcast for more than say 6 months, we like to know that you're kind of in doing it. But if you've been podcasting for more than 6 months and you're a, you know, good liberal Democrat, and, you know, support Joe Biden for president, we would be happy to be on your show.
Yeah.
For nothing. We'll do it. We'll do it for free.
We'll even do your ad reads for you, but that'll cost you a little something. Yeah.
Driftglass, you had an idea for content for our shows.
I did, because we're so burdened. Our lives are so hard. I learned a magic content trick, how to turn a main course into two meals, main course and leftovers over the course of 2 days. And it's a trick. I plan to deploy it in its generic form in ways that our listeners will never notice. It'll be very subtle.
Uh-huh.
But I learned this from the kids over at Bulwark, the Bulwark.
Oh, Lord.
And maybe we can use it here, take some of the burden off being in constant podcast prep mode, etc. And here's the secret. Day one, invite someone who is smarmy with whom you disagree, but you're scraping the bottom of the barrel looking for A-list people to get on your show. So you invite someone like Ross Douthat from the New York Times, or you invite actual Ross Douthat from the New York Times to be on.
Oh, so we're going to invite Ross Douthat to be on our show, huh?
No, we'll find someone in the C-list area who is smarmy and, you know, like a Jesse Waters or someone like that. Someone we want to say, let's have a respectful conversation. Yeah. And this was between Mr. Tim Miller and Ross Douthat. And Ross Douthat is what they call an anti-Trumper, which is, I can't be an anti-Trump guy because I have a conservative column in the New York Times. And so, you know, that would kind of fuck up my brand. So I'm just against people who are against Trump for all kinds of, you know, surface reasons or silly reasons or gestural reasons. I'll agree with everything you say, except I'm not going to take a position on anything because, you know, Joe Biden is equally bad, maybe worse. Anyway, do that for like 40 minutes and have a lot of your people. And I did do a little sampling of your people going, oh, no, fuck no. No, I don't want to hear a fucking word this guy has to say. Do that is awful in like across the board. But just do that because you got to fill up an hour. So go. Well, no. 30 minutes, because the other 30 minutes are all ads, but you got to fill up on a certain period of time. And then you say, well, it's been great having you on. It's great. Well, let's do it again. And then you break up and never see each other again.
Uh-huh.
That's great. And then the next day you invite a couple of your friends on to dunk on the guy you just interviewed. See, and talk about the fact that, and the first thing I kind of enjoyed was, I forget which one of them said, you know, it is important to have people like that, you know, anti-anties, know that they have a safe space where they can talk respectfully about these things. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? This idiot has his own New York Times op-ed column.
And he thinks Vatican II went too far.
Right. He does not need a safe space. He has his own real estate at the apex of American punditry. There's no need for you to make a little corral for him to be protected from the wolves and the sheep and all the bitey insects out there in the fields.
Welcome to the Professional Left Podcast, Ross. Yeah. Douthat, do you think nuns should be able to wear street clothes in public?
Yeah, I think.
Man.
What do you think of sexy nun costumes on Halloween? Are you for that? Is that good? Is that good with you? But then they just dunk all over him because, you know, he just is awful and he won't take a position because he knows he can't. And he's smart enough to know who the real bad guys are. And he's smart enough to know what the real issues are. But he's a terrible person. And I just think we've had very few guests on this show, but the few that we've had haven't been terrible people that our listeners actively object to.
Yeah.
And then the next time around, it's like, remember having Jay Rosen on the podcast? Yeah. Wasn't he a jerk? Oh my God. You know? We kind of like the people that we talk to.
All your friends on, all your drinking buddies on to trash your last guest. Yeah,
but it's not, I mean, I don't want it to feel like a little, you know, no homers club, you know. I don't want it to feel like a He-Man. We actually talk about fairly substantial, big issues that stretch across time, space, and dimension.
Yeah.
And I think we do it with a bit of class and a touch of élan. and I have no objection to having other people talking other than recording three tracks instead of two drives our sound
editor. It drives me crazy doing that. But, you know.
But the idea that you have someone on that you pretty actively dislike and disagree with because you feel an obligation to give them a platform, even though they've got one of the biggest ones in the world. No.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But anyway, as a concept, inviting someone on that you actively dislike.
Well, is Tim Miller on 5 days a week?
Four or five, yeah. And then he's on other things. And then every now and then he drops in, man, I was on MSNBC last night. And I have – so this is the – they live this life all the time.
Yeah.
They're on all the time.
And are paid well for it.
Yeah. And all of them are on almost all or all of them are regulars on MSNBC.
Right.
And almost all of them have live events and books and so on and so forth. So this is their whole thing. And I understand.
Well, I'm not necessarily jealous of all of that. I just think that people who tune into Tim Miller on The Bulwark want to hear Tim Miller on The Bulwark.
Yeah. Well, and his anyway.
That's neither here nor there.
But the idea that you have someone on that you actively dislike and then you.
Yeah. Then you trash him the next day. Yeah. Once they're gone. That's a little desperate for content is what that is. Yeah.
Anyway.
Unless they had some sort of deal where they had to have Ross Douthat on in order to have someone else on, which is often the case.
This is all mysterious to me.
Yeah.
We're just mom and pop podcasters out here in the middle of a cornfield doing our duty to God in America.
So, Driftglass, we're going to talk about money.
Yeah. Okay. I thought we weren't going to do that today.
Today, we're going to talk a little bit about money. Specifically, how Trump is changing the rules of the game again. He needs to squeeze even more cash out of down-ticket Republican candidates.
I am altering the deal. Pray I don't alter it any further.
So Donald Trump is attempting to charge down-ticket Republicans for the use of his name and likeness. Here's the deal. And the minute I heard that, I thought, this is insane. Not just because he's at the head of the ticket, and of course you should be entitled to promote the head of the ticket. That's what coattails are for.
Yeah.
As a down ticket candidate. But somebody out there in Trump land is already scraping approximately 4% of every WinRed donation.
Mm-hmm.
And Jared Kushner set it up that way. WinRed is a creation of Trump World. Jared Kushner set it up. And the Republican House, everyone in the Republican Party running as a House candidate is required by the RNC to use WinRed.
Yep.
And this brings in Ronna McDaniel to the story because she wanted WinRed or whatever they used as a platform to be a nonprofit. She wanted to copy ActBlue.
Right.
Make it a nonprofit to benefit the nonprofit wing of the RNC.
Mm-hmm.
And we will just, you know, if we want to, we can offer the opportunity for people to support us further. They give $5 to Trump. They can give an extra 65 cents to support WinRed. No. But that's not how WinRed operates. WinRed is a private company. And you give $5 to Congressman Dipshit from Arkansas, mm-hmm. and that candidate doesn't get $5.
No.
That candidate gets $5 minus the fees.
Right. It's a, if you will, a surcharge or a surcharge.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, that might be okay if you didn't demand and require as a candidate, you have to use this platform for your online fundraising.
Yep.
But if you want to have an R after your name on the ballot and you want the RNC to endorse you, you want any help from the national party, you have to use WinRed. Except, you know who doesn't use WinRed? Mitch McConnell.
That's right.
His leadership committee uses something else. So this idea of I'm going to, you know, expect tribute, further tribute from these candidates. And if you give more than 5%, then Donald Trump's going to personally know that you gave more.
He will know. If you just look at his portrait and give more than 5%, know that he knows. He sees you.
He knows in his heart, and you know in your heart that he knows.
He's like the Holy Spirit, and he sees
you. But again, here, there's that, and there's that story, and I know that story, and I've told this story many, many times, and it's a bugaboo of mine that, you know, this is crazy. But I don't understand why it's not more of a story in the mainstream media. Daily Beast talks about it. There's a guy at Daily Beast who talks about it every once in a while. But in all the coverage of Trump charging GOP candidates to use his name and image, I have not seen anyone mention WinRed and the surcharge. Now, Mehdi Hasan has found a spot on CNN on CNN last night.
Yeah.
Wednesday night. And he was shrugging his shoulders and saying, well, you know, Donald Trump owns the Republican Party. It's his party.
Yep.
If he wants to scrape all the money off to pay his lawyers and then there's nothing left in October to advertise for any candidates, hey, too bad. And Hal Sparks has said the same thing. I don't have a problem with it if Republican Party wants to bury itself mm-hmm. by paying Donald Trump's bills for them. But I do have a problem with it. I think when Republican voters are scammed this way, that it hurts our democracy. And I also believe that the beginning of the end of our democracy was not January 6th. If anything, it was Citizens United.
Oh, okay. I thought it was the election of Barack Obama. I guess I'm listening to all
well,
the wrong.
Citizens United, you know, when yeah. money, I've said this many times, when money is speech, money becomes the only speech.
Yeah.
And this Donald Trump constant grift mm-hmm. that is a one day story instead of the story
yeah.
of campaign finance in the most corrupt way going to benefit one person is going to open doors and lock windows in ways that we have no idea how this is going to unfold
yeah.
and how it might hurt the entire country.
Yeah. Well.
And I also think it is a way, if you do have Republican neighbors and relatives and so forth, this is one thing you can agree with them on mm-hmm. and say, look, I don't think this is fair that you are being treated this way. That anyone who wants to give money to a Republican candidate should know where that money's going, every dime of it.
Mm-hmm.
And now some state attorneys general have sued to under consumer protection, have sued WinRed. And it's been a terrible fight because WinRed says we're a private company. You can't look at our books. And the courts have said, yes, it's consumer protection. We can look at your books.
Mm-hmm.
But we still don't know who benefits. Who actually benefits from the millions of dollars? Because when you scrape off 5 cents out of every dollar given to a Republican candidate, that's still millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know where it's going. We know that Jared set it up. That's all we know.
I believe that was the plot of Superman 2. I'm not sure, but I think that was the plot of Superman. By the way, that large thundering sound you heard was not a large truck rolling past our house or anything. That's an actual thunderstorm.
Yeah, we're going to have a storm tonight. So if you hear weather behind us, we apologize.
Or if you hear us cut off very suddenly.
Because our power went out.
That means the power's gone out yes. and we're doing derecho too. Electric boogaloo.
Oh, gosh, please not. Please, no. God, no.
not this time. So anyway, that's the money. That's the money end of things. And that's yeah. important to track. That's the tribute that Donald Trump is collecting as the capo di tutti capi of the Republican mob, right? Mm-hmm. And he got to be the boss of all bosses by doing what? What was he doing that got him that position? He got it by delivering to the mob what he promised the mob he would deliver. Or, in the alternate, 95% of the time, just weaseling out of his promises by giving the mob scapegoats, blaming the Congress, blaming the deep state, blaming whoever. And the mob has already forgotten almost every inconvenient fact about Trump's years as president. They just mm-hmm. blot him out, completely forgotten. They completely forgot that Trump was in office in 2020 during the height of the pandemic and that Trump's incompetence and his lies and his corruption got hundreds of thousands of Americans killed. He is probably singly responsible for more American deaths than anyone I can think of.
Right.
And it's all gone down the hole. And that wall, now, didn't he finish that wall, Blue Gal? I heard he finished it.
Completely finished it from sea to shining sea, and then Nancy Pelosi kicked it over.
Kicked it over with her heels. Or the deep state stopped him, or something to do with that. But he really wanted to do that. He really wanted to give us all great health care in 2 weeks that would cost a nickel and cover everyone, but the deep state and the Congress and the something something. And they forget all that. They forget everything that they don't want to remember, and they just blot it all out, and all that becomes a misty past, etc.
Yep. It's also buried and forgotten that even Bill Barr says, I'm going to vote for him.
Yeah, no harm anymore.
This is Bill Barr, who repeatedly said that Donald Trump is a danger to the country.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, he will always put his own interests and gratifying his own ego ahead of everything else, including the country's interests, unquote. But now he says he'll vote for Trump in November.
Mm-hmm.
Another quote from Bill Barr. I think the real danger to the country, the real danger to democracy is the progressive agenda.
That's us, baby.
And I've said Trump may be playing Russian roulette, but continuation of the Biden administration is national suicide, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
He really likes his tax cuts.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want death threats.
Right.
And that's it. And it's easier. to be publicly for Trump.
And he wet his finger, his chubby little finger, and put it up in the air and saw which way the wind was blowing. And like, oh, the mob is cool with this and the party's cool with this and all my friends are cool with this. Well, guess what? I'm going to boldly stand up and say, yeah, however bad Trump is, he's just one bullet in the chamber. But Biden is certain national suicide. You won't have a country after
that. I'm sorry. They're all behind the scenes in their private library saying Trump's going to lose in a landslide and then the fever will break.
Yeah. But that's what they said. You know,
they've said that how many times?
Yeah. 2021. Fever's going to break.
2008. The fever's going to break.
Yeah. And it never does.
Because
it's not a fever. No. It's a political party that you helped build.
It's what they are.
Mm-hmm. So the same is true, you might have heard, for New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu, who all those Never Trumpers and all those Beltway media pundits had such very high hopes for until he had to go on the George Stephanopoulos show and open his big fat mouth, didn't he? And George Stephanopoulos, after a few opening questions, spent the entire rest of the interview trying to pin Sununu down to get the answer to one question. And it went on for 9 minutes. It was impressive that Stephanopoulos stuck with it. And Sununu just looked at the camera and smiled and lied and lied and acted like the biggest shit. Because he's just, in his mind, he's like, fuck it, I'm going to be here next time. I'm going to be here in 2028. And I've already learned from the mob, it doesn't matter what I say or do. So I'm just going to back Trump. This is from The Atlantic. Quote, Trump snags another top Republican. Oh, no, not you too, Sununu. A parade of GOP leaders have abandoned their principles to enter the Shameless Bootlickers Hall of Fame. In an interview with ABC's George Stephanopoulos over the weekend, New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu vaulted ahead of the pack to enter the Shameless Bootlickers Hall of Fame on the first ballot. It's one thing to abandon your honor and embrace the big lie, as you must in order to remain in good standing in Trump world, that the 2020 election was stolen. But it's a whole new level of sycophancy once Sununu reached on camera, one Sununu reached on camera to acknowledge the truth that Joe Biden, in fact, won in a fair election, that Trump was complicit in the January 6th insurrection, that Trump still faces multiple indictments and yet still endorse the ex-president, unquote. Sununu's interview also managed to add more egg to the face of a mainstream media whose face is now entirely egg.
It's all egg, all the way down. Mm-hmm. This is from Media Matters. Quote, in February 2023, the New York Times ran a lengthy feature on Sununu with the headline, Chris Sununu Eyes the GOP's Normal Lane. Mm-hmm. In 2024, does it exist? The subheadline adopted Sununu's framing, quoting him as saying, I'm conservative, but I'm just not an extremist, unquote. Yeah. It was not until the 23rd paragraph of this extended tongue bath that the Times mentioned that, oh, yeah, by the way, Sununu says he'll vote for Trump if he's the nominee.
Yeah, down the fine print, way down the fine print.
Again, from Media Matters, quote, a Washington Post profile of Sununu waited until the 34th paragraph. You know, that's 11 more paragraphs than the Times. Out of 39 total, to inform readers that Sununu says he will still vote for Trump if he's the Republican nominee. There's no question we're better off without Biden in the White House, he said. They love their tax cuts, I swear to God. Mm-hmm.
And they don't want the mob coming to their house.
And they don't want the mob. They want the mob to be with them in 2028. They want a future in the Republican Party, right? Mm-hmm. The governor was on an intra-party crusade against Mr. Trump, the Times wrote in January. Last November, the Washington Post described Sununu as a vocal Trump critic. Axios used the same phrase in December. Back in April 2022, Politico characterized Sununu as, get this, the one Republican Trump can't touch. Mm-hmm. The story was frequently the same on mainstream cable news, CNN in January, the morning of the New Hampshire primary, which is a good time to interview the Republican governor. I give him credit for that.
Yep.
But anchor John Berman said voters wanted more unplugged, that is, unscripted and authentic moments from then candidate Nikki Haley, former governor of South Carolina. Sununu, John Berman said, was unplugged all the time.
He tells it like it is, man.
anchor Kate Baldwin then jumped in. No matter what, I want Chris Sununu energy all the time. Baldwin interjected, I'm here for the Chris Sununu energy. God. And of course, the next day, it's Morning Joe's turn. They were singing Sununu's praises despite Haley's significant loss in New Hampshire.
Oh, honey, there's got to be a pony under that pile of shit somewhere. Man. And they keep digging and, oh, look at Chris Sununu. Oh, no, he's not. Oh, Bill Barr. Oh, I guess he's not. And they never learn. They're all looking for some place to put their chips other than on the place where the sane people are, which is the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
Now, this is the power of Trump within the GOP, that he can induce governors and senators and former attorneys general to look straight into network news cameras and tell the most ridiculous, bold-faced lies, to betray their country on live television, to convince 50 million or more Americans that January 6th never really happened, or it was Antifa, or it was some sort of harmless protest that Democrats are now turning into an excuse to persecute their enemies. You know, you're the enemy, and they're trying to persecute you by coming through me. That's what it's all about. And Trump amassed this power by giving the mob what generations of Republican presidents had promised them but never delivered. First and foremost, to make Democrats suffer and cry, liberal tears. Second, to outlaw abortion, because abortion is murder, period. Anyone who participates in abortion is a murderer, period. And anyone who's pro-choice is really pro-murder, period. Mm-hmm. It's all very simple. It's incredibly medieval, but it's very simple to understand because these are very simple people. It is the central religious tenet of the Republican Party, one that has been safely mouthed by Republican politicians and other grifters for decades because there would never be any consequences for pretending to believe it, because Roe was eternal. Everyone knew Roe versus Wade is forever. So your rhetoric could be as violent, as righteous, and as righteously violent as you wanted it to be. You could escalate as far as you like because it's never going to be a problem. Fanatics could block clinics, and they could pass laws making it virtually impossible to operate clinics, even blow up clinics and murder doctors. But ultimately, none of that would fundamentally change anything because Roe was eternal and everyone knew it.
And then Trump came along.
Yeah.
And he delivered on the promise that most Republicans were secretly counting on never being fulfilled.
Yeah.
And don't forget that abortion in particular is a money machine and has been a money machine since 1973 for the Republican Party. You slap a baby on an envelope and you can make $1 million.
Yep.
And so it was the cumulative effect of 35 years of millions of Republican voters electing Republican presidents who stacked the courts with hard right-wing conservative judges. This was Lawrence O'Donnell's point.
Right.
Trump has just delivered the coup de grace.
Mm-hmm.
And this has had at least two different seismic effects on Republican politics. First, some of the loudest and stupidest anti-choice voices have had to scramble to find a way to explain why all abortion is still murder and Democrats are still baby-killing monsters. And the Supreme Court has at last, you know, the great day has come.
Mm-hmm.
They've eliminated the last obstacle to Republicans establishing their very own nation of Gilead. But you see, maybe we don't really want to do that because it kills women. It kills good Christian women.
Mm-hmm.
Our policies are hurting women and women who want to be moms and so forth. But that's the point of Gilead, folks.
Right.
That's Margaret Atwood's point. And so, yeah, maybe we don't want to do that, but we definitely do want to do that.
Right.
We do want to control women. That's mm-hmm. the point. Yes. So you can see the problem. And so they're all now desperately trying to flail their way to being on all sides of the issue. The ones who want to get reelected, who are trying to hold it together for 2024,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's the Carrie Lake abortion cartwheel.
Whee!
While at the same time, they're not being indecisive.
We're not being indecisive. You know, and fans of the Monty Python's Flying Circus will know this as splunge.
Come on!
A sponge!
Did he say splunge?
Yeah. Yep.
What does plunge mean?
It means it's a great idea, but possibly not. And I'm not being indecisive.
Good! Right. What do you think?
Splunge?
Okay.
A textbook example of splunge this week came from Charlie Kirk, who you might know as that balloon-headed fascist ignoramus, who has made himself incredibly rich by peddling reactionary garbage to people who are even stupider than he is. This is a transcript, is from Media Matters. Quote, President Trump is talking about how the Democrats are the extremists. That is absolutely right. I'm neutral on this particular Truth Social post. I'm not. I understand why he's doing it. Let me defend it. Let me think why he's doing it. You can hear him on the fly trying to make shit up about why this makes sense when it makes no sense at all. The current abortion decision by the Supreme Court in Arizona is technically, legally, the right decision. It's one that I morally agree with, but it is unpopular with the people in Arizona. And Arizona is a must-win state. So President Trump is trying to float out the idea, float out, he does not want to be tied to the unpopularity of this current measure. That is why he put it out there. However, there is an email we got here from John, which is, quote, Charlie, I'm not voting for Trump anymore. What is the point? If Trump compromises on abortion, even if he has a better chance of winning, why not offer free school, healthcare, UBI? Okay, now Trump's got my vote. Cool, that's great. That would help him win an election, right? Yeah, it's the Democratic platform, more or less. So based on what do you think, whatever it takes to win, compromise when you can't govern, Trump has abandoned the pro-life cause, so he does not deserve my vote, unquote. Back to Charlie Kirk. I have never said you should do whatever it takes to win. Bullshit. I've never said that. I've never alluded to that. However, you know what they say about the word but, honey?
Yeah. But it's
what you put behind you before you attack, right?
Yep.
However, if you want to try to have the most morally clear position that can fit within the popular will of the people so you can get political power, that's the point, get power. There are positions that we hold that are unfortunately untenable with the American people.
Uh-oh.
Ruh-roh. The American people think that we're a bunch of fascists. So be quiet about the fascism part. So you try to find one that is the best version of that, and then you try to find how you can make it fit with the American people. You know, I want tax cuts. They want some culture bullshit, so I'll give them culture bullshit and they'll give me my tax cuts. That is the whole idea of the will of the people and the sovereign. And sometimes the people, they don't want the morally correct and clear position, you know, fucking heathens, right? So do you completely betray your deeply held beliefs that are rooted in scripture? It's definitely not rooted in scripture. And rooted in truth? Of course it's not rooted in truth. Of course not. So no, Trump is not pro-choice. I think it's kind of laughable if someone were to say that, unquote.
And as my colleague Conover wrote at Crooks and Liars, Charlie Kirk arrives at the bargaining stage of grief.
Yeah.
You know, he's just, what is he going to do? He has to have his marketability as being holier than thou about everything. And that brings us then to the second seismic shock on the right. This is among the conservative elite who were run out of the party once Trump consolidated power, but never gave up their terrible conservative beliefs and habits. These are the true believers.
Mm-hmm.
Like Charlie Kirk. Oh, no, this is our moral center.
Mm-hmm.
To oppress women is part of our faith, right? And the faith of our fathers. And it should tell you something about these conservatives in exile, you know, because Trump was bad and so forth, that this latest terrible shock to their system is nearly identical to every other mind-blowing bombshell that they've been through the past 8 years. You know, that they've found out that the left has been right all along.
Oh, no. Oh, no. The worst, being wrong is, of course, an unforgivable sin on the right. You can't be wrong. You can only be not conservative enough, but you can never be wrong. But the worst way of being wrong, as if there were, you know, there's a lower circle in the being wrong hell, is that you made the liberals sound like they're right. You're making the point for them. That's heresy. That stuff gets you staked out on an anthill. Now, if you've been paying attention over the last 8 years or 10 years or 20 years, you may have noticed this trend over at Conservative Incorporated. Every few months for the past 8 years or so, some prominent conservative out there who has snagged themselves a really sweet media gig based on their superior knowledge of the subjects of politics and conservatism stumbles over the fact that something they believe to have been inviolable conservative orthodoxy was, you know, bullshit all along. Nobody ever believed it. It was all a front. It was all bullshit. In fact, history has shown that without exception, with the exception of Beltway pundits, no group has been more loudly and repeatedly and disastrously wrong about the true nature of the Republican Party and the conservative movement than elite Republicans and conservatives. They have never understood their own party, or they've lied to everyone else about their own party and lied to themselves. Yet somehow, all these idiots and all these pundits still have elite mainstream media jobs or mainstream media jobs. Somehow they're all employed at CNN and MSNBC and the New York Times, Washington Post, The Atlantic, all over the place. You can't swing a dead cat in the media without hitting one of these guys. But you know who turns out to have been right about the right all along? Yeah, that's right. It was us un-American, terrorist-loving, godless, commie, baby-killing liberals who've been right all along and who are all still treated as pariahs by the same mainstream media that treats these never-Trumpers like gods. And this happens over and over again. Around and around the conservative epiphany merry-go-round goes and always ends up in the same place. Let's examine this New York Times op-ed from last week by David French. Arch-conservative, evangelical, fundamentalist for life, David French. Quote, "The great hypocrisy of the pro-life movement," unquote. Now, David French is in no way unique. He's not the only one who, after decades of living La Vida Falwell, suddenly noticed a glitch in the Republican Jesus matrix, somehow happening at exactly the same moment that Donald Trump happened along and ripped the mask off the Republican Party and showed the world who they had really been all along. Now, before he passed, before he died, I wrote dozens of posts about the late Michael Gerson's very long, very strange journey from an evangelical thug and key advisor and speechwriter to George W. Bush, and then to his gig at the Washington Post, where he spent 8 years relentlessly slagging and lying about Barack Obama in very unchristian terms, I might add, to his very slowly dawning realization that his Republican Party really was going to nominate Donald Trump, which shocked him and he believed was impossible, to his very slowly dawning realization that his conservative evangelical movement was in fact 100% cool with Donald Trump.
Yep, that's right. It's been a well-trod path, this denial, 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 decade after decade, that anything was fundamentally wrong on the right and with the Republican base, that to win elections, the Republican Party had been filling itself up with garbage people for decades, bigots and bigotry, racism, imbeciles whose votes and viewer attention had been purchased by way of promises of all sorts of nonsense by party elites and Fox News. And just like the collapse of the housing market, it turns out that all the specialists and experts and journalists who were supposed to be keeping an eye on the basic soundness of the system were actually profiting by looking the other way. But rather than going along with the increasingly absurd reportage from the cloistered garden of the Beltway media about the state of American democracy, there were a few of us out here in the real world telling a very different story about what we were seeing and hearing, particularly during the Obama administration. And just as happened with the collapse of the housing market, anyone who was out there contradicting the received wisdom of the Beltway media was dismissed as a crackpot and an alarmist, because all the very serious people just knew that foundations of American democracy were rock solid, that the two-party system was functioning as it should. You know what, Driftglass? It's going to be Rubio.
It's going to be Rubio. Everyone calm down. It's definitely going to be Rubio. The establishment wing of the Republican Party is going to reassert itself, and it's going to be Rubio, so everyone just calm down.
And when it all fell down, how uncanny it was, how deeply uncomfortable it made all those very serious people that the real Republican Party turned out to be just as we America-hating, godless, commie liberals had been describing it all along. That's when David Brooks wrote a book called Humility.
Mm-hmm.
But he never mentioned this. He never mentioned liberals were right, right? A party of bigots and imbeciles, grifters and demagogues, cynics, fascists, homophobes, oligarchs, collaborators, racists, which those professionals with superior knowledge of the subject of politics and conservatism, like Michael Gerson and David French and David Brooks, had denied and denied and denied existed at all.
Right. There's just...
It's not out there. I don't know what Rush Limbaugh says. I don't know.
Just a loud fringe out there. Don't pay any attention to them. They don't really matter.
They're just noisy. Yeah.
They're just noisy. Don't worry. They're loud, but they're not a problem. But Michael Gerson was a real conservative soldier. So even as the political and ideological movements to which he had devoted his entire adult life were shown to have been colossal frauds, he never retracted any of the slander he spent 8 years heaping on Barack Obama and Democrats and you and me, Blue Gal.
Yep.
He never stopped pretending that his Republican Party had suddenly lost its mind with no warning, spontaneously, overnight in 2016. He never stopped trying to blame both sides. He never stopped trying to tone police us dirty hippies when we started using naughty words to describe the thing that was happening right in front of us. And of course, he never lost his gig at the Washington Post just because he'd been horribly fucking wrong about everything. And so now here comes David French, who was hired by the New York Times, who, to his credit, in this column, actually gets a little further down that road than Gerson ever did when he acknowledges that many of the critics of the pro-life movement were right all along. This is a quote, "I still believe there are many deeply sincere pro-life Americans. I see their anger in response to Trump's statements, even when they've previously supported him. There are people who genuinely believe that all human life is precious and should be protected from conception till natural death." And Driftglass here accepts that as true. I accept as fact those people exist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, Mr. French goes on, "But I also recognize that many of the critics of the pro-life movement were right all along. When push came to shove, the pro-life position was either secondary to other values or it genuinely was punitively tribal, enthusiastically aimed straight at the supposedly licentious left, but ready to be abandoned the instant the commitment to the unborn child might endanger the larger MAGA political project.
Right.
Abortion is the poison pill that Trump doesn't want to swallow," unquote. And then, at no extra charge, David French also got a little taste of the brand of evangelical Christian love and forgiveness that his side has been handing out to us America-hating, terrorist-loving, dirty commie hippies for as long as I can remember. Quote, right. "At its worst, the pro-life movement was also deeply cynical. Many of its members have spent the last 8 years mocking and bullying pro-life conservatives who refused to support Trump, even when we rightly said he was a terrible ambassador for a virtuous cause. I've been called a baby killer or murderer or heretic more times than I can count," unquote.
Welcome to the party, pal!
And you know what, Mr. French? Oh boy, do I have a Liz Cheney YouTube for you.
As a mother and a patriot.
Well, another one where she talks about Democrats murder babies.
Yeah, like, Democrats. Boom. We have to talk about the murder of babies by the Democrat Party. Yes,
it's pure evil. It's the face. We are the face of pure evil. That's those. Where do you think this shit comes from, David French?
Yeah. And she stood in front of a podium with cameras running and said that. Yep. For a deeper perspective, Driftglass went back nearly 20 years and found this Time magazine feature from February 7th, 2005. This is nearly 20 years ago, but this is post 9/11. I want to make that clear.
That's right.
This is the same exact issue, in fact, in which Michael Gerson was named one of Time magazine's 25 most influential evangelicals. What, no Ross Douthat? Was he on there too?
He was only four at the time.
And it is so clear after reading this that the dangerous trajectory the Republican Party was already on should have been obvious to any reasonable person who bothered to pay attention.
Truly.
The title of the article is, "Does Bush Owe the Religious Right?" What do they think Bush owes them? His campaign barely had time to sweep up the confetti last November 3rd before the victorious president got a congratulatory bouquet of praise, threats, warnings, and demands. In your reelection, God has graciously granted America though she didn't deserve it, a reprieve from the agenda of paganism.
I haven't heard paganism in a long time. Really.
Bob Jones III, president of Bob Jones University.
Mm-hmm.
Don't equivocate. Put your agenda on the front burner and let it boil. You owe the liberals nothing.
Yeah, they're not really people. They're not really citizens. You owe them nothing.
Nothing.
It's our country, not their country.
Having helped wage a presidential campaign over big issues like a constitutional amendment outlawing gay marriage, conservative Christians are not likely to be content winning skirmishes like the one that newly installed Education Secretary Margaret Spellings fought last week against the cartoon character Buster, famous for being Arthur's best friend. Margaret Spelling objected to one episode that featured Buster visiting a real-life lesbian couple in Vermont. After her warning about the dangers of exposing young viewers to the lifestyles presented in the episode, that liberal bastion PBS decided not to distribute the show to its 350 publicly financed stations.
Yeah.
Financed often by lesbians. I don't know if you know that, Driftless.
Yeah, and by liberals.
And by liberals.
We've got
who
tote
think
bags.
It's liberal.
Yeah, we've got tote bags to prove it. I mean, it's years gone by, but yeah, nope, can't show that stuff.
Yep. As Bush begins his last term in the White House, the voters who believe they did more than anyone else to put him there are asking themselves and him, what now? And when, if not now? He's not the typical politician who understands us, said Michael Ferris, chairman of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. He's one of us.
That's right.
And this is lame duck Bush, whose job it is to deliver, right?
Right. You better deliver.
You better deliver now because you've got no other campaigns to run.
Mm-hmm.
Evangelical activists, this is getting back to the Newsweek article, right?
Time
article.
Yeah.
Evangelical activists, for their part, say that as Bush looks forward, he should also look back. They claim that what brought church-going Christians, including a record number of Hispanics, to the polls more than any other issue last year was gay marriage. Initiatives banning it were on the ballot in 11 states. And as you said, Driftglass, that was Karl Rove. And
Matthew Dowd. That was Matthew Dowd. Who
making sure to get not only Hispanic, but Black evangelicals to the polls to stop gay marriage.
Stop gay marriage. And then, you know, as a side effect,
they can vote for Bush.
That's right.
And it's amazing to think about this. But in 2004, banning gay marriage was on the ballot in 11 states and it passed in every one. Think about that for a minute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And overwhelmingly, this wasn't like close. Mm-hmm. Getting back to the Time article. So religious groups were startled and angry when Bush, bowing to what he said were political realities, seemed to signal in a pre-inaugural interview with the Washington Post that he would not press the Senate to pass the federal ban. The reverberations came almost instantly. Former presidential candidate Gary Bauer, who sends a daily email to 125,000 Christian activists, says his computer mailbox was jammed with hundreds of complaints, many lamenting, I worked my heart out for this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Does this remind you of John, the guy who wrote Charlie Kirk, that he's no longer voting for Trump?
Oh, yeah. No,
because
I worked.
if he's abandoning the abortion, then he might as well just do universal basic income.
Right. I'm a good Christian man, and I hate women like I'm supposed to, and I'm scared of Black people, and I worked my butt off to get this man elected, and here he's not giving me what I want.
Right.
How can he expect support from me if I don't get support? I'm appealing to Jesus to change his heart. but this goes back decades. This is how they've been transactionally operating with these really theocratically driven,
absolutely
anti-democratic, anti-American, right-wing religious thugs for decades.
That's why this article is so important, because it didn't start, the transactional crap didn't start with Trump.
Hell no. It started when Reagan invited Falwell to stand by his side and help him. And the moral majority was part of Reagan's coalition.
Yeah.
And George W. Bush, you know, followed suit. George W. Bush kissing their ass. And I know we mentioned this on the podcast, but John McCain called Jerry Falwell an agent of trouble and influence and a bad influence in 2000, and he lost to George Bush. And when he ran again in 2008, he made sure to go down to Liberty University and kiss Jerry Falwell's ass.
Yep.
And call him a good man and deliver the commencement address there because he understood. He finally got beaten into his head.
Yep.
These are the people who elect Republicans.
Yep.
And they're fucking crazy. But if you want to win, you have to appease them.
You have to suck up to them. You don't have to.
You don't have to keep your promises. We've learned that. Promise them anything. And then after the election, you just go, well, it's the deep state. It's Congress. It's political reality. You never have to deliver on this shit, but you got to promise them crazy shit to get elected.
Yep.
And Trump cashed that check.
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm. A little bit more of this article. The Arlington Group, a coalition of conservative religious organizations, quickly fired off to Bush political guru Karl Rove a private letter signed by such figures as Bauer, Don Wildeman of the American Family Association, Focus on the Family's James Dobson, conservative standard bearer Paul Weyrich, and evangelist Jerry Falwell.
This is the Mount Rushmore of right-wing evangelicals who founded this whole thing, really. Yep.
And they laid down a none-too-subtle threat that the administration's defeatist attitude on gay marriage might make it impossible for us to unite our movement on an issue such as Social Security privatization, where there are already deep misgivings. That's mob behavior.
That's a straight up trade.
Straight
that's
up threat. Trade.
You give us, you beat up on gays and we'll let you fiddle around with Social Security because they don't care about that shit.
Right.
And that has been the transactional nature of the Republican Party for as long as I can remember.
Yeah. They are sellouts from day one.
Yeah. And then along comes this orange freak who actually does what the mob wants him to do. And the people who'd been like, oh, this would be all freak out. Like, well, you know, we never really thought we'd get it so we could build entire careers on pretending to enjoy it. But now... Yeah.
Yep.
Now we have to face the wrath of people who never wanted this shit. And that is sort of softly happened what happened with gay marriage. Is there were way too many people who have gay friends and go to school with people who are gay and know people and have children who are gay. And they were like, no, but it's this medieval right wing fundamentalist church that hates. They're defined by who they hate. And right now, they don't hate anyone more than the licentious left unwed mother who just went out and had sex.
Hey, Driftglass, let's do a news roundup. The judge in Donald Trump's trial has demanded restraint from the press after some news reports included details about jurors. This is from Slate, quote, Trump juror quits over fear of being outed after Fox News host Jesse Waters singled her out. Jesse Waters got a juror bumped by doing everything possible to expose her identity, attorney says.
He
should be sanctioned by the judge for that. There's no reason the judge shouldn't be able to call him in.
Well, I think Fox News should be sanctioned because that was during the course of his work day.
Straight up jury interference.
Yeah. Well, extortion.
Yeah.
You know? Leveling threat.
Well, and they've already been suggesting multiple times, guests on that show have been suggesting multiple times, you know, try to get on that jury. Right. Be a Trump supporter. Try to sneak into that jury so you can hang the jury.
And the Law and Order Party is very cool with that. It's very, very cool with that. This is from NBC News. Speaking of Law and Order, quote, Senator Tom Cotton doubles down on comments urging people to, quote, forcibly remove, unquote, protesters blocking traffic. Senator Tom Cotton on Tuesday doubled down on comments urging people delayed by traffic stemming from pro-Palestinian demonstrations to forcibly remove some protesters who are blocking streets. This is Cotton now. Absolutely, I support people if they're blocked by traffic by pro-Hamas vigilantes in the street. They should get out of their cars, they should move them to the side of the road, and they should let traffic continue. Cotton, Republican Arkansas, told NBC News on Tuesday, unquote. He's telling people to get out of their cars and beat people up.
Yeah.
Let's be very clear about that. Tom Cotton is telling people to get out of their cars or use their cars. I mean, if you can't get out, you know, to forcibly move people out of the way.
He is suggesting violence. He's a hippie puncher, and he especially likes punching black hippies.
Yeah, yes, he does.
Eric Erickson forgot the two most important rules of reputation rehab, Republican reputation rehab. First, delete your Twitter account.
Yeah.
Just delete all your archives. We call this Matthew Doubting.
Yes, we do.
That way no one can trace anything you said in the past that would make you look like a liar or an idiot in the here and now.
Right.
Second, get a fellow traveler on a cable news network who agrees never to mention your past on the show. And let them reintroduce you to the public under your new brand, you know, Never Trumper, fabulous friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
My former boss, whatever you think of him.
Yeah.
We call that Nicole Wallacing.
Yeah.
Now, she's very good on a lot of things, but she sure is good at rehabbing the reputation of her Republican friends.
She real good at it. Her and Scarborough, really, just top notch.
Anyway, this was Eric Erickson on April 16th Twitter this week. Quote, "There was no insurrection. That is a left media talking point. It was a riot, yes. It was not an insurrection. Those who believe this don't actually care about the truth, though." Unquote. That's the new gospel.
Right.
It was just a riot.
Just a riot. Not an insurrection. Just a riot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this was the reader's added context to this tweet. On January 21st, 2021, you know, 2 weeks after the so-called not an insurrection, Eric Erickson himself said multiple times in an editorial that it was an insurrection. Quote, "The insurrectionists, having constructed the gallows and hung a noose, entered the Capitol calling for Vice President Mike Pence to show himself," unquote. Yeah, they kind of forget about that hang Mike Pence stuff.
Yeah, you know.
Hanging the vice president. When Donald Trump knew that's what they were doing, Donald Trump did nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Eric is not very bright, and he's not good at this reputation rehab stuff.
No. He's already rehabbed it so many times. It's like a tire that's been patched once too often. Yeah. There's no fixing Eric. Fortunately, the Wingnut Welfare Trough is very generous and runs very deep. For the second time in 2 weeks, the Arizona House Republicans have blocked an attempt to repeal the state's 160-year-old near total ban on abortion, which was reinstated last week by the state Supreme Court. And they were giddy about it. They were cheering and high-fiving each other. Yeah. It's gross. It is just fucking gross. And that's what happens when you let these people run things. You end up people trying to drag you back to the fucking middle
age. You can change that, Arizona.
Yeah. Vote. Yeah. All you got to do is vote them out. That's all you have to do is get rid of those people by voting them out.
Yep. And they're all up for re-election, I believe, this year.
Go get them.
The United States Senate quickly dismissed the so-called impeachment case against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. The Democratic-controlled Senate deemed both impeachment articles unconstitutional because they didn't rise to the level of high crimes and misdemeanors. The trial was then adjourned without any votes to convict or acquit. Mitch McConnell cried bitter turtle tears because our national norms had been violated, Driftglass.
Oh, very sad. So those Democrats, those damn Democrats violating our norms like that.
Violating our norms like what? Leaving the Supreme Court with only 8 members for years?
No fair remembering. No fair remembering stuff, Lou Gehrig. Yeah, not supposed to remember stuff. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we'll never hear the airtight case that impeachment managers Marjorie Taylor Greene and Harriet Hageman had planned, which makes me feel sorry for all those late night comedy writers who thought they'd get the next 3 weeks off.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I read this, it reminded me of the last scene, if you haven't seen, of Inherit the Wind. A great movie. You should go see the movie. Go to the original one with Spencer Tracy and Frederick March. It's a wonderful movie. But the very last scene is the end of the trial, where the judge says, okay, you know, guilty, a dollar fine, whatever, and it's over, and bangs the gavel. And that's Harry Morgan, who's the judge. But Frederick March, who plays the pro-Bible evangelical guy, had a whole speech planned, had pages and pages of speech that he was going to give, and that was his whole purpose of being there, that he would get on the radio, this new medium of radio that was going to be in the courtroom. I think it was even WGN radio. I'm not sure. But the radio was going to be in the courtroom, and he was going to give this spellbinding speech that would bring the nation to its knees and have them praying and bring back Jesus into people's lives. And he was fucking ready, man. And the judge banged the gavel and said, okay, case is over. And that was it. And March stood up and said, no, I have a speech here. I have a speech. And the judge says, well, I'm sure all of your followers here would love to hear it, but the case is over. And that's when the radio guy started packing up the microphone and putting it all away. And Frederick March is like, but, And he started giving a speech and nobody was interested. The circus was over. Nobody fucking cared. And everybody walked out. And this is all based on the actual true story of Inherit the Wind, the actual monkey trials. And he died a few days later, probably of a broken heart. But it was this desperate attempt to get a wider audience for her stupid, hateful message that now Marjorie Taylor Greene has been denied.
Today she jumps out of bed and starts vacating the chair.
Yeah, well, of course she does.
And so she's surrounded by reporters again. Yeah. I mean, that's it. She'll always find something for attention because she's good at that.
Yeah, she is.
The Supreme Court allowed Idaho to temporarily enforce a strict statewide ban on gender-affirming health care for transgender teenagers. The law makes it a felony to provide medical treatments such as puberty-blocking drugs, hormone therapy, and surgical procedures to transgender minors. Doctors could face up to 10 years in prison for providing gender-affirming care. And, you know, there is so much procedure to this and years of prep. And these parents are going to have to, if the parents are supportive of their child, are going to have to pull up roots and leave.
Yep.
And this is the United States of America, but it ain't.
But this is just the gay marriage ban of 2000.
It is. It's all over again.
It's
the moral same panic.
Yep. The same people, it's the satanic panic. It's the same people over and over and over again. And I cannot say on a published podcast what I wish would happen to these people.
Nope, you can't.
Let's just say if Rapture comes tomorrow, we get all their stuff.
Yes, so, we do.
Come on, Rapture. A second Republican agreed, speaking of Marjorie Taylor Greene, a second Republican agreed to co-sponsor an effort to oust House Speaker Mike Johnson from his job less than 24 hours after Johnson outlined a plan to send aid to Ukraine and Israel. Representative Thomas Massey, Jesus, another just piece of work, joining Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene's attempt to end Johnson's speakership, stood up during a closed-door Republican conference meeting and told Johnson to resign, saying, "You're not going to be speaker much longer." Johnson told him to piss up a rope. Johnson, meanwhile, dismissed the effort to remove him as speaker as absurd, saying, "I am not resigning." Without Democratic support, Republicans would need a simple majority to oust their second speaker in 6 months. One Republican called the situation a clusterfuck, and another said, "We are screwed." Yep, you sure are. And you know who screwed you? You did.
Yep.
You did this to yourself. This is entirely your own goddamn fault.
Yep.
You know what? Six of you cross the aisle, declare yourself independent, shake Hakeem Jeffries' hand, and put him in office, and you'll get a lot of shit done.
You'll be murdered. That's what they're afraid of.
And that's what the subject of the next speech by anyone who's got a microphone on the Democratic side, Congress, should be. I know for a fact there are at least six or seven people on the other side of the aisle who want to work with us to get things done, but they're terrified of being murdered by the mob.
By their terrorist base.
Right.
By the terrorists in their party who are running their party through fear. And their mob boss, their boss of the terrorists, is Donald Trump. The Supreme Court effectively abolishes the right to mass protest in three U.S. states. It is no longer safe to organize a protest in Louisiana, Mississippi, or Texas. The Supreme Court of the United States announced on Monday that it will not hear McKesson versus Doe. The decision not to hear McKesson leaves in place a lower court decision that effectively eliminated the right to organize a mass protest in the states of Louisiana, Mississippi, and Texas. Under that lower court decision, a protest organizer faces potentially ruinous financial consequences if a single attendee at a mass protest commits an illegal act.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to come as a surprise to Nazis marching in South Carolina when one of them ran over a woman with a car.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there's
On the other hand, the ACLU has promised to take any future cases from protest organizers and takes heart from the statement by Justice Sotomayor, which accompanied this week's denial of cert. The statement notes that the court's denial expresses no view about the merits of McKesson's claim and suggests that the court's 2023 decision in Counterman v. Colorado which held that negligence can never be the proper standard when it comes to speech, and that intent is necessary for incitement, should govern any future proceedings in this case. So that is now, you know, in the documents that can be referred to in court.
Yeah.
To defend protest organizers.
We saw Mr. McKeeson on the Chris Hayes show last night.
Right. He wasn't the organizer, but he said the ACLU is going to take any case of anyone who gets caught up in this. And it's an opportunity.
Right.
Let's put it that way.
But right? That's how far they're willing to go.
But I really want to see what happens then when a Nazi march winds up killing a woman.
Well.
Again.
I'm sure
what happens then?
I'm sure there's a
Clarence Thomas. What happens then?
I'm sure there's small print that's like, you know, EOKR. It's okay if you're a Republican.
No, it's okay if you're a Republican. It's the same as it ever was. Yeah.
And now some good news. This is from NPR, which is having problems of its own that we'll talk about at the next podcast. But this time, we're just going to do straight reporting. These Arizona Mormon women are rejecting Trump, fraying GOP support in a key state. Quote, it was Ann Lewis's idea to put a Republicans for Biden sign in the front yard in the lead up to 2020. For her, it came down to civility. As a teacher for over a decade, the mother of six little ones, and a lifelong member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, she felt then-President Trump did not show true leadership. I was embarrassed anytime a clip of Trump at that time was on and my children were in the room, Lewis said. Lewis is not alone in her thinking. In 2020, GOP residents of Maricopa County in Arizona banded together to stand up against Trump. The signs were created by Dan Barker, a leader in the Maricopa County LDS community and former GOP-appointed judge, who wanted to find a way to support Biden without giving up his lifelong Republican identity. His wife, Nan, was the one who pushed him to have a sign. She probably got there quicker than I did, said Barker, who in 2020 started a political action committee, Arizona Republicans Who Believe in Treating Others with Respect. Dude. Next time, come, I'll give you some help. We can work this out. We'll workshop this. I just wasn't quite comfortable identifying with the Democratic Party. And so for me, I said, hey, well, I'd rather do something like Republicans for Biden, unquote. And so he did.
And Biden doesn't care. Vote for him in Arizona and it'll be fine.
You just know that these are the Haley voters.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You just know.
A good chunk of primary voters who are never Trumpers, really.
Yeah.
In other Arizona news, Driftglass.
Yeah.
Carrie Lake has raised in the first quarter of 2024, $5,622,079.
That's a lot of money, Blue Gal. That's an awful lot of money.
Yeah. And she spent $3.1 million of that. She now has $2.5 million on hand.
Well, okay.
So, you know, that's enough. That's a lot of money. $2.5 million.
I consider $2 million in the bank a lot of money.
I would like to have $2 million in the bank. Mm-hmm. Her opponent, Ruben Gallego, has $20.5 million in the bank. $20.5 million. He's raised. I'm sorry, he's raised that much. He has $9.6 million on hand.
That's more, isn't it?
Over four times more. Isn't more. It? Yeah.
And his campaign, you know, doesn't have to be expensive because all he needs are a little bumper sticker saying, "I'm not Carrie Lake."
I'm not Carrie Lake is the theme of my campaign. Yeah.
I'm not crazy. I'm not Carrie Lake.
Also, Carrie Lake should keep talking.
Please. Please, Carrie, keep talking and keep cartwheeling.
Cartwheeling on abortion.
Just keep spinning and spinning and spinning into the future.
Those Arizona State House people who are giddy over this.
Yeah.
They know who their constituency is.
They sure do. They sure do. And it's not those LDS women, those LDS moms.
No, it's
in Arizona,
not.
Who are sick and tired of that kind of behavior.
Yeah. You know?
I'm sure they like their tax cuts, but they like their civility too. Now, we do have some local news here in Springfield. It's kind of a big story here. I'm not sure if it made the headlines, but it should have.
It should have.
Because we wanted to go out last night with a friend of ours from out of town, a podcast listener and a friend of ours who was in town for Lobbyist Day at the state capitol. And here in Springfield, Illinois, the state capitol cafeteria ran out of food.
They ran out of food. Big news. They ran out of food.
A hand-lettered sign. It was adorable. Hand-lettered sign at the state capital cafeteria that we can't take any more orders because we're out of food. Cool. see, we got to get a little more in sync with what happens politically, you know, in at the state level in town. So we thought, well, we know a little bar downtown. It's a nice bar. It's got pool tables on the second floor. I know the owner. It's pretty cool. And the right next door is a little restaurant that we can go into, and then we can eat in the bar, because that's how you do it. It's a carryout place. We told our friend to meet us there, and we rolled up, and there were 1 million bikers in front of the bar, which
all
never happened.
Part of a bait. Yeah, they were lobbyists.
They were lobbyists. And and I dropped my wife off there and then drove off because I'm afraid of bikers. I said, honey, defend me from the bikers. No, I had to go find parking. And it came down, and you had made friends with five of them. And,
they wanted us to come in and help eat their food. And so
Come on in. Come on in. It's a party.
We like helmet laws. Sorry.
Sorry, man. You're going to get in a fight like 2 minutes after we walk in the door. But they were very nice. I mean, there's nothing scary about them. They're just advocates, and they are bikers, and they seem like perfectly nice people. And, we saw legislators going in their suits and ties, which is hilarious and fun. Yeah. So we saw a place across the street that served a jerk food, jerk chicken and jerk this and jerk that. Let's go over there. So we got over there, and we walked into the middle, empty restaurant, totally empty. Walked into the middle of a Monty Python sketch, the cheese shop sketch. Okay, one of my sides will be fries. We have no fries. We have no fries. And they're opening up cabinets, and there's no food in this restaurant. Everything we ordered, there was none of it.
They're locusts. The lobbyists are locusts. They just swoop in and eat everything.
They swept in, and I'm glad for local businesses. I hope they did great. I hope they got made right. I hope they all can retire on this.
Seriously.
Jesus, they ate everything in town. Yeah. So we ended up cobbling together a meal there. It was very good. But it really was after 9 guesses on the menu.
What do you have?
Do you have
tortillas and some steak and some cheese. We'll make you a quesadilla.
Okay, we can do that. And it was all very good.
We'll go there again.
They were laughing like, no, we don't have that. No, we don't have that.
We
don't have that. And so it was either a Monty Python cheese sketch, or it was the Billy Goat sketch from Saturday Night Live. There's cheeseburgers and there's Pepsi, no Coke Pepsi and no fries chips. That's it.
Yep.
But anyway, we had a little adventure and we really enjoyed our out of town friend, and
and he's a lobbyist. And so next time we're going to pick him up and take him a little bit out of the downtown so that we can go to a restaurant with food
available downtown.
All those lobbyists come down on the train.
Yeah.
Or everything within walking distance was just empty. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And as we were driving back from our little visit upstate, we saw car after car. We saw maybe 5 or 6 cars all with legislator plates.
Right.
Heading down I-55, coming back to Springfield. Some of them, as you pointed out, were in big red pickup trucks.
Yeah.
Indicating that they were from a rural district and wanted to pretend to be farmers.
Exactly.
And, but they all descend on the town.
Yep.
And we really do enjoy the company of listeners who come in from out of town for, a cup of coffee.
Yeah, come to Springfield and we'll have coffee or dinner or lunch or whatever.
It was a blast. And
it's fun.
There's good restaurants and we will promise that there will be food when you come down.
we'll find a place that has some food and French fries, at least, for gosh sake.
There's an ample supply of corn in the immediate vicinity. I'm sure we can find some corn-based food to feed.
Corn tortillas. There was corn in my burrito. So, it was corn.
Okay.
And Illinois has people corn, not cow corn, as Middle Child says many, many times.
Yes, indeed.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week we have a pair of all black kitties, Jack and Misty.
Uh-huh.
They are cousins to our cats, Barack Hussein the Kenyan Usurper, and Olive, who is a terror.
Yeah.
He's a parkour kitty, and he's just so silly.
You almost stopped this podcast cold. Let's put it that way.
He's just out of control. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Misty is named after Mystery Science Theater 3000, which I love that. And both of these lovely black cats eat freshly poured cat food. Our fake sponsor, whether you serve pet store perfection or dollar store dreck, your cat will sit on the kitchen floor and demand that the food they eat is only freshly poured.
Freshly poured, freshly poured. Oh, my Lord, it's freshly poured.
And you can visit Jack and Misty at our Facebook page or website. And you can send your internet kitty, dog, or other pet to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. And a big hat to John Ossoff this week.
Uh-huh.
He's a snack. he really gave Louis DeJoy what for this week.
Yeah.
And so with John Ossoff, we say, go Postal Unions!
Hell yeah.
Let her on the air unless you say otherwise.
Also, do not forget our gourmet coffee guidelines or our Jerk Shop Go guidelines. If you want to buy us a taco burrito from the Jerk Shop or whatever, buy that as well. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for us, buy one for yourself or vice versa, whichever you prefer. This is not charity. This is our job, and this job is at the end of a long day.
Yeah.
If you can spare $5 a month, please do. We really do appreciate it, and you can do that at patreon.com/proleftpod. Please also share our show on social media, and if you love this podcast or even nominally like it, give it to a lobbyist and deduct the whole goddamn thing. Or just please get someone else to listen to, and really, thank you so much for doing that.
Hey, Drift Class, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
This week, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties are making big money selling food to hungry lobbyists, passing Frisky's wet food off as salmon mousse and beef tartare.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Just think about loving.
Think about loving.
Just think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2024-25, GGBG Productions.